If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. Hello and welcome. I am William Morgan, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and syncers of our day. This morning, on this 28th day of January, for episode number 121, we're going to decode the divine language of the universe with the help of today's special guest. We've got our compass. We've got our square. All right, class. Let's begin.
Marty leads, but just where is he taking us? Hello and welcome. I'm Douglas Bowles, and today on 42 Minutes, we're going to consider the architecture of the universe. And thankfully for us, today's guest can guide us into understanding its construction through the aid of Mathmagica. Marty Leeds, writer, lecturer, alchemist, videographer, and teacher, is the author of 5 books, including the now out-of-print Pi, The Great Work. His books cover a range of subjects, including the occult, language, symbolism, and spirituality, as well as their relationship to mathematics. He has 2 new books that will be shipping in February, the second edition of Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1, and The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pavanis, which is a further exploration into English gematria and the universal language of mathematics, considering such enigmas as 11T1 and the magic square of the sun, Metatron's cube and the holy 108, the numerological breakdown of the name of Jesus Christ, as well as the mystical feat of cracking pie. More information about these works can be found at Mr. Leeds' website, MartyLeeds33.com. Marty is a regular guest on many popular podcasts and was a featured speaker at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia last year. He is a longtime songwriter and released his first full-length solo record, Opus Medico Musica, last year, available for purchase on his website. Marty leads a quiet, rural life, and we are happy to be meeting him today. Hello and welcome. How are you doing today?
Good. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Great.
Well, my first contact with you was your True Meaning of Christmas video, which was incredible and really made my holiday more meaningful.
Oh, thank you.
What was the inspiration for you to get into sacred geometry? And it seems like your work is so much more than that. What do you call this totality of number, language, and symbol?
Life. understanding human consciousness. I got into sacred geometry and actually focusing on numbers just throughout the years, basically just taking a journey through trying to understand my life, the world around me, and that this led me into all different sorts of subjects: theology, philosophy, mysticism, magic, all the sciences, everything from quantum physics to physics, and that just eventually led me into this kind of journey or quest, pursuit, and focusing, looking at all of these different, seemingly different sciences, combining them into one, kind of amalgamating them, and then viewing them through the lens of mathematics, really, mathematics and geometry, because it is this sort of universal language that seems to be shared by all the cultures throughout history, known and unknown history, you know, history and prehistory. So that's why I ended up focusing on math, just because there seemed to be this unifying language that I could kind of bring all of this stuff together. And mainly I ended up focusing on it and writing about it because it seemed to work. That's the first and, you know, the most important thing, that basically, you know, you could look at a certain phenomenon. I'm sure we'll get into some of this, and extract higher levels of information from this phenomenon, from the word, from the geometry of it, by peering deeper into mathematics and all the ways that mathematics can speak to you. And that included sacred geometrical concepts, mystical concepts, and numerological concepts, a lot of concepts that are not considered in modern academia, if you will. So that's how I got started anyway.
You called it something like, I like the phrase that you use, the occult, or the occult nature of reality. Could you explain that concept a little bit more, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure. Actually, let's just talk about the occult, because there's a lot of baggage that this word carries with it, of course. Occult basically just means hidden, as we all know, right? And we have this tendency to shy away from the cult because we've been taught to for our entire lives. Don't look into 666. Don't look at the unlucky number 13. Don't look at, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Occult, of course, just means hidden. And you have to realize the thing that kind of allowed me to slough off the baggage of terminologies like esotericism, occult, things like that, is that when you look at, like, for instance, a flower, like when you look at a flower, you have to realize that there's an occult nature to that flower. And that occult nature of the flower is the Fibonacci sequence, right? I mean, you go in and you look at this flower. If you go and just out to your yard and you look at a flower, that flower is not going to tell you about its own occult nature, its own hidden nature. It's not going to tell you about the mathematics in which it grows into. It's not going to tell you about how it balances itself up this ratio. Well, in order to understand how this flower goes, in order to understand its science, if you will, you have to go into the occult nature of it. So the occult nature of our reality is really just understanding how our reality works. And so pursuing the cult is actually is very, very important in understanding our reality. And I always quote this verse in the Bible. It's Proverbs 25:2. It's one of my favorite verses. And it says, "The glory of God is to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter." And so when you realize that when you're trying to understand your reality, the occult nature of our reality, you have to go into its hidden nature. You have to go into its occult nature to truly understand this world that we've been given and, you know, where we come from, where we're going and why we're here, if you will. So
would you say this is the value of your work, that somehow modernity has lost touch with the real divine through our relationship with nature, and therefore this is kind of a reconnecting? Or would you disagree with that statement?
No, this is the problem. I think that once again, there's just so many preconceived notions, preconceptions, misconceptions, misnomers about spiritual concepts, about mystical, metaphysical, if you will, esoteric concepts. When we think about the idea of God, for instance, most people have this definition of God that he's this, you know, a man first and foremost that lives in some ethereal sphere up in the heavens far away, that it's nothing that you can commune with, connect with, understand, and integrate with, if you will. We've kind of lost touch with all of these. Modernity has lost touch with a lot of these concepts. Well, the idea for me was that, looking into sacred geometry, looking into the language of mathematics, is that you were actually communing, if you will, communicating with this divine force that uses mathematics as its language. And this is the force of nature. This is the force of, you could call it God, Alu, Amen, Jehovah, whatever name you want to give this force. This is the force of nature that's underpinning, enlivening, and, you know, centering and animating all of nature. And that you could actually commune with this thing through the language in which it uses. And that language, once again, being sacred geometry, sacred number, math. And this is what Gnosticism is. This is what Gnostic Christianity is talking about. It's talking about, hey, there's a force, it's intelligent, it's within all things, and that you can connect to it. And that's the idea, and that's what I'm trying to bring forward.
Oh my God, Philip K. Dick and Zebra, that's all I can think about.
I haven't read that book. I haven't read much of Philip K. Dick.
He had a Gnostic experience, but the environment, I mean, the further you investigate, it's more like he was getting, like, messages. He called it zebra because it's a big organism that's camouflaged. You get the
in black and white too,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like right out in the open, but it's a big organism. He called it Valis, the vast active living intelligence system that's giving him messages and codes and encoding itself in nature and so forth and so on. But it's the same thing you're talking about. You're just describing it as God coming through the mathematics. How everything orders itself.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
What's magic? Is magic kind of like playing with the programming?
Magic is how I explain it in the books anyway, is that magic, when you actually, once again, let me say this. When people bring up terms like occultism, mysticism, you know, magic, right? We have these preconceived notions that what is magic? Oh, it's, you know, we're drumming up, we're going to contact some ethereal spirit in five dimensions, you know, and we're going to drum up Satan or something. We have all of these preconceived notions about what magic is, right? Well, the thing that I think people have forgotten completely is that esoteric information, magical information, mystical information is never woo-woo shit. It's always been practical. And that's what I think people have forgotten, is that this information, understanding the occult reality, this body of information that we're talking about, gematria, numerology, that sort of thing, sacred geometry, is that there's a practicality to it. And that's what I'm trying to bring up. And it's simple, it's practical, and you can use it in your own life. So, You know, so that said, now what is magic? Well, what is, first of all, I mean, what is the Holy Bible? It's called the Gospel. I mean, the Gospel. It's talking about spelling, right? You're talking about this magical art of what I'm sure we'll talk about this, but gematria, putting numbers to letters, right? Word construction. That's why you cast a spell. That's why sibyls come from syllables. Seances come from sentences. Writing is, you know, it's where we get rites.
But okay, so pause, and then what about people who aren't, you kind of have to have a limber mind to make, so a lot of your jumps are really rational, but then some would be considered non-rational. They're like sideways leaps. They're a little too playful for some people. What do they do with your work when they come up against a sideways leap like that, where you say sentence and seance? You know, you're making this connection that seems to be self-evident and true, and it would be difficult to refute, but at the same time, it's like, this isn't logical.
Yes. let's address this head on, because most people that view the world, they view science. They want to view science in this, let's just say, left and right brain approach, right? We basically understand that essentially you have these kind of two modes of thinking, and you could call it masculine and feminine thinking. You could call it analytical and critical thinking, as opposed to imaginative artistic thinking, right? Well, I think a true understanding of the world comes from the balance between these two modes of thinking. So critical thinking is extremely important, right? Obviously, we want to be logical, rational, reasonable. We want to be empiricism is obviously important. But what I'm saying is also is that you can use, for instance, let's just take a look at the language of mathematics. You can use mathematics in this very quantitative way, right? It's trigonometry, it's algebra. We can use it to understand and deconstruct and engineer and that sort of thing. But what I'm also showing is that you can use mathematics in a creative way and an artistic way. And by using that, bringing creativity, artistry to the table, you can actually unveil deeper levels, higher levels of information within these mathematics. And it's only by merging the two, the left and the right, the masculine and feminine, the critical thinking and the artistic thinking, that you're going to get the full, the true holistic perspective on what this reality is. And so this is why I like to, number one, I follow the methodologies and modes of the tenets of modern science, empiricism, verifiability, repeatability. But I'm also trying to bend it and say, guess what? You can also use artistry, creativity on this. And so I like to use both to show, hey man, okay, let's just use rational science to deconstruct this, but now let's also use our creativity and see what else we can unveil.
Wonderful. And then also to that same note, what about the people who think that you're satanic? And I'm thinking specifically of people who believe in a historical, factual Jesus. And then on the other side of this, there are those people who think that because you're showing the symbolic importance of Jesus, that, you know, they still have that same literal mindedness that this makes Jesus not real. Can you unpack the enigma and message of Jesus a bit as you understand it?
It might be hard to go into that just because we haven't gone into the cipher and things. And for somebody that doesn't know the work, they might just be like, okay, this is, if they're listening to this, if they're on the receiving end of this,
Wonderful.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So yeah. Would you like the version of English gematria that you employ? Is this something that you came up with on your own, or was that something that you kind of discovered and then explored?
I uncovered it myself. I haven't seen anybody else do this.
Because I haven't seen anyone else either, and it's really fascinating. Go ahead and explain it real fast.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen anybody else do this, and many people have contacted me saying they haven't seen this before either. And basically what I do is I put numbers to the letters of the English alphabet, and I do this according to – and we really don't have time to go into it here, but I can give you kind of this rundown. About basically I used esoteric and spiritual or religious symbols to deconstruct the mathematics of our English alphabet. And basically it's this idea of there's 26 letters of the English alphabet. We're going to cut the English alphabet in half. And then we're going to go A, B, C, D, E, F, G is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then H, I, J, K, L, M is 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then we're going to take those exact same numbers, 1 through 7, 7 through 1. And we're going to put it onto N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then U, V, W, X, Y, Z is 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, so I basically, this is the cipher for the English alphabet. Now, like I said, we don't have time to go into this here, but if you want an explanation of this, you can go on my site, martyleads33.com or martyleads33 on YouTube. And basically, I show in myriad ways how you can use multiple things to deconstruct this, the English alphabet, and find the very particular numbers to the particular letters of this of our alphabet. And you can use I'm going to make these claims here, and these are open-ended claims unless you go and check them out. And I'm saying that you can check them out because they're free videos or free blogs. You can deconstruct all of this yourself. You can use the Tetragrammaton to find this cipher. You can use the Freemasonic square and compasses to find this cipher. You can use pi and non-prime numbers to use this to find this cipher. You can use dice. You can use the emblem of Israel. You can use the chromatic music scale. It's just, there's a bunch of different symbols and ideas that you can use to find this very particular correlation, number to letter correlation. And so that's what I'm trying to show and trying to lay out the evidence for, not make some open, you know, just some blanket claims or anything, is that I'm going to go and show you this directly, you know, that so much so that you can follow along as I deconstruct this. So.
And so the foundation of this gematria is the number 7. Why is 7 so important to our reality or the architecture of reality?
Well, 7 plays an integral part of the human experience. Basically, when you look at 7 is wrapped up in the human experience. We have 7 notes of the major scale, 7 chakras, if you will, in the endocrine system, 7 days a week. That's the number of heavenly spheres that we see in our sky that we take in with our optics, right, is of a sevenfold nature, right? Sun, Mercury, Moon, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, 7 heavenly spheres, celebrated by mystics, alchemists, hermeticists throughout time. 7 days a week, 7 notes of the major scale, et cetera, et cetera. We have, you know, 7 deadly sins in the lore, 7 stars in the Pleiades, et cetera, et cetera. So this number 7 seems to be wrapped up into the human experience. And so the idea for me was to, when deconstructing the alphabet, was like, okay, well, if 7 is such an important part of the human experience, is it possible that our alphabet was based on this number? And so that's where I started. And then if you actually go into the numerology of 7 becomes this, you find out that the properties, the qualities, the essences of the number 7 in and of itself have this special quality to it that really makes 7 stand out. And then, of course, all you have to do is go back in our history and the mythology, and you'll see the number 7 is just littered in every single myth and every single holy book and every single, you know, philosophical doctrine, etc. You see 7. And because this is a language of a creator, in my opinion, and there's something extra important about 7. So hopefully that answers that question.
Yeah.
We're going to step over for a second though and get your personal opinion on something.
Sure.
Pop culture, magic or nature?
Both. This is the thing that I try to stress on. I know Scott Onstad as well. I think you may have had him on his show.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He actually talks about this in his book too. Where we have this tendency as human beings to try to say it's one or the other. It's either A or B, it's black or white, it's left or right, it's yin or yang, right? Well, I don't think it works that way. I think that there's something more going on. I think that these principles that are inherent, they're the laws of nature, if you will. They're the laws of nature that are inherent in the math in and of itself. These principles are timeless principles. They were going on 2,500 years ago, 25,000 years ago, and they're going on right now. They always play out in our lives. It's only if we educate ourselves when we actually get to understand these principles and see how they show up in our lives. So if you have a group of people, an elite group of people or whatever, that are running the Grammys or whatever it is, since that just happened last night, you have to understand that these people could be using these principles, these occult methodologies, and they could just show up inherent. You know what I mean? That this is just an organic, natural process that happens in art, in architecture, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you have to understand that it's always going on. This information is always working because it's the laws of nature, but that there are also, in my opinion, an elite group of people that know this information that are the, if you will, dark occultists that are using it against people because people are uneducated about these ideas. So so my goal is to try to educate people so that they can pick this stuff out in the pop culture and see it in their own lives.
Interesting.
So and if I may say one thing too, the new book that I just released today, The Peacock's Tales, The Alchemical Writings of Claudia Pavonis, is I actually talk about myself in this book, and I usually don't talk about myself in the books. But people ask me about, hey, how does this information play out in your own life? And the book is about how I adopted completely organically two pseudonyms that I used in my writing. And this was long before I had even discovered the cipher for the English alphabet. And then I went back later and used the cipher on these names that I had adopted and then show how this worked out mathematically. And it's jaw-dropping. And it was worthy enough to write a book about it anyway, I felt so.
Well, we've explored this, the idea of an inherent archetype that people just embody, that like they're born into an archetype.
Like their fiction ends up being more symbolic and having more meaning than they had been conscious of during the production.
Especially with actors. You just see this where over the career of an actor, they end up, their different roles end up kind of being able to talk to each other and tell a larger narrative, which is kind of astounding, kind of communicating this language, this
right.
underlying language that you're...
Which brings us to the number 42, because that number comes up a lot, which is one of the reasons why, of course, our show is 42 minutes. But yesterday, I had this experience while counting, because I do inventory at a warehouse, that 14 times 3 is 42. Is that right?
Yeah, sure.
And it looks so weird to me. And now we're talking about sevens, and of course, 7 plus 7 is 14.
Sure. And let's take a look at those 3 14s really quick. The art of juggling actually expresses this principle of 42. You have 14 phalanges on your hands, right? You have 2 on your thumb, little sections on your hands, 3 on each finger.
Is that 3 hands?
Means,
well, 14, 14, 14 is 3 hands.
No,
is that
he's
like,
talking about segments, finger segments.
Yeah, I know, but 14 times 3 is 42. That would be 3 hands because each hand has 14.
Exactly. So, and then we could talk about the esoteric side of this. We could talk about the Holy Trinity, 3 hands coming together, but let's not go there just right yet.
It's juggling, though. How does that relate to juggling?
Okay. So basically, you have 14 phalanges on your left hand, 14 on your right, but you have 3 balls, right? So when you have a ball in your left hand, a ball in your right hand, if you assign the ball that you're juggling 14, equating to the 14 phalanges of your hands, that means you're juggling the 42 principles of the Egyptian Mod, if you will. 14 for
That's
one ball, 14.
Up. That's fucked
now,
up!
Now think about this esoterically. Now this is where the numerology comes into, and then we can actually, I'm going to say this, and then if we have time, let's go and find pi in our number line. Let's look at the number 1111, and let's look at the number 42.
Do we need to spend some time with pi first, or are you good?
No, we can go right to pi.
Because I noticed also, though, in pi is 3.142, but you've also read it 3.141 sometimes.
Yes.
But I noticed that the 4.2 is inside of pi.
Yes. Let me finish this thought here a second. So when you have – no, it's all right. So you're assigning – back to juggling. You're assigning the ball 14, right? So you have 3 14s, 14 – this is juggling, 42, right? So now notice you have 3 14s. Now, this is numerology. This is understanding the qualitative aspect of numbers and how you can put numbers together. You have 3 14s. Well, that's nothing more than 3 1 4, and that's in juggling. Okay? So that 3 1 4 in juggling, the 3 balls, 14 each, gives us 42. Now, let's take a look at this concept of 42, pi, and then the number 1111. So, number one, this is the 121st podcast, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. So, that's 11 squared. 11 times 11 is 121, right?
You're 1111. That's hilarious. All right.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk out of our base 10 system. So what we're going to do is walk out of our base 10 system.
Okay.
So our base 10 system being the decimal system being 0 through 9, right? This is the decimal system giving you 10 digits.
Yes.
0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Or we can look at it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? So we're just going to walk out of our base 10 system. That's the system that's right on your hands.
Yes.
And we're going to go to that number 11. So, and what we're going to do is mirror these numbers. And we're going to show how this mirroring works. And this mirroring works not in the gematria, not in the numerology. This works in the hard mathematics. We're not talking about esotericism here. We're talking about the hard mathematics. 11. 11 squared is 121. Well, the mirror of the number 11 would be 11. It would be 11, right? So we're going to take the number 11, we're going to mirror it. That gives us 11. Well, we're going to square 11, it equals 121. So basically, we just created 1111 by taking the number 11, we mirrored it, and then we squared that number, and we got the number 121, the number of this podcast. Mirror of 11 squared would be 121. So that's a mirror Hopefully you get that. 1, 2, 1, 1, 2, 1. We're going to walk up to 12. 12 squared is 144. The mirror of 12 would be 21. 21 squared is 441. So once again, it's a mirror. The mirror of 12 is 21. 12 squared is 144. 21 squared is 441. It's a mirror. Let's walk up to 13. 13 squared is 169. The mirror of 13 is 31. This is 31 squared. It's 961. 169, 961. It's a mirror. 11 mirrored. 12 mirrored. 13 mirrored. Now we're going to go to 14. 14 squared is 196. 41 squared is 1,681. So the mirroring stops. If you notice, 11 squared mirrors itself. 12 squared, 21 squared mirrors itself. 13, 31 squared mirrors itself. We get to 14, the mirroring stops. Now, this is just the hard mathematics. Notice when you went 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Notice if you drop the 1 in 13 and put a decimal place after the 3, it gives you the first five digits of pi, 3.1415. Just as it unfolds in this sort of Zen, esoteric, mystical way in our number line, we can find pi in the unfolding digits of our number line. So we started at 11, 11. We found where that mirroring stops, and where that mirroring stops is between the 13 and 14, and that's exactly where we find the decimal place in pi. What's interesting about this is 13 plus 14 plus 15 equals, drumroll please, what is it?
Is it 42?
It's 42. 13 plus 14 plus 15, the exact place where we find pi in our number line, where the mirroring stops, we find the 42 principles of the Egyptian Mat, the principles of law, order, and truth.
One of the things I've heard is that someone ascribed the number 42 to the blind and dumb demiurge who created the world.
Have you okay.
But what is your take on that kind of Gnosticism? I mean, because obviously right here, this is illumination, what you're sharing with us. And it's hard to... Yeah, I mean, that 42 is there. It's hard to deny that luminescence.
To deny that would be to deny mathematics. You know, that's how the math works. There's no question about that. You grab a calculator, 100% of the time you're going to get that. So what's there to question is my opinion. The demiurge being associated with the number 42, right? Okay, let's take a look at this idea of in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That's what John 1:1 says, right? Let's go to Genesis. In the beginning, God said, let there be light. There was a word that was spoken, right? Freemasonry, you have the lost Masonic word, Hiram Abiff, right? Dude, you had this lost Masonic word. All of a sudden, three ruffians came about, Jubilum, or whatever. They're like, hey, Hiram, give us this lost Masonic word. Hiram's like, go fuck yourself. I'm not giving it to you. They kill him. There's a word. John 1:1, there's a word. Genesis, there's a word. Mayan, this is the creation story of Chalam Balam. The word of the one unloosed itself from stone-like silence and shuddered all of eternity. There was a word that was spoken. Now let's go to Hinduism. Oh.
The word.
There was a word.
Om. There's only one word. Om.
There's only one That's word. Right. So now let's take a look at all of these different cultures. They're all creation stories, and they're all telling us about this word that was spoken, right? Well, if we have to do is take a step back, take another step back, pump the brakes, and take two more steps back and ask ourselves a question. If there is a creator, if there is a God, and all of these cultures are sharing the same creation story, what is this word that God is speaking? Well, what language does God speak? He speaks math. He speaks mathematics. And so what is the word that God spoke? It's pi. And that's what the Egyptians are saying, that there's 42 principles of the Egyptian Mat. These are the principles of law, order, and truth. Those people obviously believed in God, no question. And they're saying, hey, 42 principles, and look where we find 42. Right where we find
pi. And pi never stops. So he's always...
And pi never stops. So the creator is always creating. Our universe is expanding, and so is the digits of pi. I mean, it's been reimagined many different ways throughout history. But the same principles are being taught because they are principles inherent in the mathematics itself. And all we have to do is go to that universal language to understand it, in my opinion. And that's how I've come to understand this body of information. So...
Boy, I feel like we should end it now. Wow.
But I just imagine God is like Homer Simpson going, pie.
Yeah. You guys basically understand that whole thing, right? That basically the philosophy behind it and of that idea is basically if there is a word, if there is this ratio or number that could somehow encapsulate or somehow is a representation of this creator or a representation of the creation of our universe, and there was a creator that gave us a number, well, what better candidate would there be than pi?
Well, there's another candidate too, though. And so could you tell us about phi and its relationship to pi and how it also encodes the architecture of the universe?
Well, pi gives you this geometric understanding of the creation of our universe by its geometry as well. Right. So basically, you have this idea that every single story, this is known as a primordial egg, primordial sphere, egg of creation, primordial sphere, primordial atom. That's how modern science understands it. But it's basically this idea that all of our material creation, everything that we're looking at right now, was once encased inside this primordial form. Right. Well, that form is a circle. Why is it a circle? Because a circle encapsulates the most amount of space. So if you were going to actually, you know, geometrically, philosophically try to understand the birth of our creation and you wanted to encapsulate everything that possibly existed into one form, the circle would be without question the form that you would have to use because of its inherent geometry. So now when we put that diameter down of, you know, the diameter and the circumference of pi, because pi is the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. We've been talking about this and we didn't even establish that yet, so sorry. But it's the idea that everything was encased inside that circle and that circle broke. And that's what the geometry, I know I'm going over this very quickly, I apologize, but that's what the inherent geometry is symbolizing. Now, phi, what does phi do when we look at phi? Well, it swirls out, does it not? And it, when it swirls out, it grows. It grows.
Oh, like the nautilus shell.
Exactly.
It's the broken
DNA.
Circle. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's basically the shape that you see all over nature. I mean, phi is so much of a constant in nature that we might as well call it a natural law. I mean, to me, to call it anything else is silly. And then, of course, we can go and look at phi. Well, where would we find this 1.618? Well, you know, if there was a creator, well, how would it, you know, what did it give us to understand this balancing ratio, this golden mean, golden proportion? Well, it gave us the number five. All you have to do is look down at your hands. The ratio of phi is found in a pentagram. That's all you have to do is draw a perfect pentagram and you will find 1.618 in that. So this isn't, that's just the straight geometry of it. This is not woo-woo shit. This is not Bliss Bunny New Age stuff. This is, there it is. So that's where it really gets down to simplicity, elegance, beauty, and principles located right on your hands and right in our number line. And so that's what phi represents, the unfolding, the unfurling, the unfolding, the cyclical nature, the spiral nature of our unfolding creation. And that's why phi is within everything. You see it in plants, you know, pine cones, tornadoes, eddies and rivers, our galaxy, et cetera, et cetera. The human body is created with us. So and notice phi, P-H-I, and pi is just an H away, you know. I mean, it's that, you know, once again, it's, I mean, if you really want to get down to first principle, simplicity. Then is there a relationship between those two? Well, in my opinion, of course there is. You know, of course there is.
So. All right. On a personal level, what's up with the peacock, man?
Oh, well, you'll have to buy my book and find out. tell you, actually. No, I'm just kidding. Let me say this too, that I do have books for sale and things like that, but I also have a whole lot of information for absolutely free. So if you're interested in this information and you think that I'm full of shit or wonky or something, I just want to let you know that you don't have to give me a cent of your money for you to go and start looking into this stuff. I have like 40 videos for free. I'll always post videos for free. And then I have a blog at worldmysteries.com that you can check out and basically read the context of the core of my this book that I'm promoting right now for essentially free, the good portion of it anyway. Now, the question you asked about what was it? Where were you asked? Oh, the peacock. The peacock is it's this pseudonym, Claudia Pavonis, that I adopted, like I was saying before, and it was based off this alchemical element known as the cauda pavonis, which means peacock's tail. And so I show and I explain why I adopted this, how this came about fairly organically, and then also what the elements and symbols of a peacock's tail means. You know, we're going to look at the idea of what does a feather mean? symbolically? What is the explosion of light from that dark central source and the eye and the peacock, the seven colors of the rainbow expressed on the peacock's tail, what all of that stuff means, and why it's related to alchemy. So
nice.
Okay, and then let's just kind of list over from there to Marty Leeds 33, and then maybe we'll talk about Jesus again. So why 33, and what's up with Jesus?
Oh, well, Jesus is your personal savior. Or do you not? Sorry, no, I'm just kidding. I also have a sense of humor about this stuff too. Okay, so Marty Leeds 33 just came about because when I put my website up, I was 33 years old. It's literally it's nothing more than that. I wrote my first book when I was 32. Second book came out when I was 33, and I put my website up when I was 33. So I was just like, well, that makes sense. It's synchronistic, if you will. So I put that on. So now this number 33 that's attached to, spiritual concepts. I mean, basically 33, I mean, we have 33 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, right? This ascension process is based on these numbers 32 and 33. We see this in the temperature, of course. Water freezes at 32, melts at 33.
Right.
In the Sefer Yetzer, this is the, well, it's the 10 Sephiroth. Sephiroth means counting. It means enumeration. And then you have the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. These two concepts, the Hebrew alphabet, 22 letters, and the 10 Sephiroth, created what was known as the 32 wondrous ways of wisdom and the tree of life, the Kabbalistic tree of life. So you see this number 32 directly referring to esoteric, you know, esoteric ideas, mystical ideas. So now let's go to Christ. He lived to the age of 33, right? Well, his if you put the gematria equivalents to the name of Christ, it gives you the number 32. So CHRIST is 365, 567, 3 plus 6 plus 5 plus 5 plus 6 plus 7 equals 32. So you have the numbers 32 and 33 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonic ascension, of the Sefer Yetzer, the 32 wondrous ways of wisdoms, if you will, all of this encoded within the name of Christ directly. And so Christ, what Christ is represents is, how do I say this?
How do you say it?
How much time do we have?
We have about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if I can get through this real quick. Okay. There's basically two versions of the Bible, right? And this comes straight from the 33rd degree Freemason of Albert Pike. He was the 33rd degree Freemason, right? His book, Morals and Dogma, he talks about there's two versions of the Bible, the profane version and the initiated version. The initiated version was the realization that, okay, I'm reading a story about Jesus Christ, but I am not reading a story about a man who was actually taken up to a cross, actually nailed to the cross, blood was let down, you know, he died, he went into a tomb, he was actually, you know, raised. That these are symbolic elements, it's allegorical, it's riddles, it's numerology, it's gematria, it's astrotheology, it's symbolism, it's psychology, it's philosophy. This is the initiated version of the text. If you're initiated into this understanding of reading the Holy Bible, you're not going to be drawn into any of the, let's just say, the cult mentality that surrounds the Bible, the organized religions of the world. Let's just call it what it is, the cults.
The concreteness of the symbol.
You're not going to read this story literally, right?
Right.
The profane version, so that's the initiated version. The profane version is the versions that you're going to be taught, you know, if you go out to any organized religion across any church in the United States or across the world. They're going to teach you about a man who lived 2,000 years ago. You know, he's going to come flying back in the clouds. Everybody before him, go fuck yourself. Everybody after him, besides 144,000 of you, you know, you're screwed too. Believe him, otherwise you're going to burn in a fiery pit of hell. That's the profane version, and that's the version that you get taught by all the religions across the world. Now, what does profane mean? It means profanity. What does profanity mean? It means cursed. It means that version is cursed. So when we look at the story of Jesus Christ, that's an allegory and riddle for the Son, but it's also an allegory and riddle for the enlightened state of being of the human being. It's the state of grace, the illumination, the enlightened self. That's what the allegory is. The whole idea is to relate to Christ, to say, I am Christ. I am that enlightened being. I am, you know, I will die and resurrect. I will die to my lower animal self, my ignorant self, and I will raise myself up to this enlightened state. And that's what Christ means. And unfortunately, that's not what's being taught in any of the organized religions. And so that's what I'm trying to teach.
Final question, though. How has this affected your music?
It's done a lot for my creativity. I don't know because I don't know how to say this, because a lot of times, like, what's that line from Jeff Tweedy? He says, "I shake like a toothache every time I hear myself sing." So I'm kind of critical to my own music. So, but I will say this: it's done. It's allowed me to be have more direct access to that creative realm than I've ever had before. Like, I just sat down the other day in between editing books and just wrote a song in within like an hour and just posted it right away. And I just have more access to that creative realm than I feel like I've ever had before. So, understanding this is, I don't know, integrated me into that creative realm, if you will. I mean, I think artists are secretaries for angelic revelation. So the role of an artist is to go into that creative realm, in that ethereal, non-material realm, and pull things out and bring it down, bring it into the material realm, and henceforth lift the material up to the ethereal, if you will.
All right, real fast, do you tune your guitar to 440 hertz or 432 hertz?
I tune to 440.
So. Well, I think that was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Marty Leeds on SyncBook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. More information about the work of Mr. Leeds can be found at martyleeds33.com. For more information about the SyncBook, our guest, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you'd like to support the show, we urge you to become a donor. We're putting all that money to good use. Thank you for the people who have donated. And you'll find the donation links under each episode on the website, and perhaps consider setting up a monthly charge. Stay tuned to SyncBook Radio. Lots of great shows coming up this week and next. Listen for James Corbett, Delicate Steve, and Kirby Ferguson. Thank you so much, but I must insist that you got to go out and do the math.
My dear lady, I hope you forsake me, lying here in our bed. Crying that we do when we come unglued ain't a deluge we've seen just yet. If it weren't for the woven mists of a good man, I might have lost it all some time ago. But lucky for the hero, slayed him a Draco, a princess now I have to keep. A passion and desire, well, they'll burn you like a fire and tie you till your soul, when you can't take no more, and they may just steal your heart. My whole moments are lined with curtains, sparkling silver and gold. I've been witness to so much resistance, I can't make sense of it all. And fall as we do, our inherent truth is to rise up and walk on our own. Shown as it is, we'll always convince the keeper to let himself go. A passion and desire, they'll burn you like a fire and tie you till your soul, when you can't take no more, and they may just steal your heart. Can't take no more, and they may just steal your